everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I brought you in a late birthday gift, and you've already consumed it.
Well, I had some help.
Yeah, a bunch of folks
I think
here.
That the gift kept on giving this morning.
There are a couple more pieces out there, one for Dan Scheer and one for our guest, Martin.
And what did
Napier.
You call it again?
It's a Danish coffee cake from Mona's Danish Bakery.
Yes, and, it was delicious.
The crew here really loved it, which is great. Hello, everybody. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, December the 3rd, 2021. As we get ready to begin year number 12 in January of the Buckmaster Radio Show right here on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk, the radio station call letters, KVOI, The Voice, worldwide live listening, and all of our podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our thanks to our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. Thank you, Dan Scheer, for your support.
Thank you for having me.
The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today is with Pima County Administrator Mark Napier. Mark, good to see you again.
It is good to see you, my friend, and Mona's. You can almost smell it from the other room, can't you?
I know. We will be talking more about Mona's in about 10 minutes. Mark Napier was named to the position of the assistant Pima County administrator earlier this fall after a brief stint as the number two person in the Cochise County Sheriff's Department. Mark was elected Pima County Sheriff to a four-year term in 2016. His new post oversees justice and law enforcement for Pima County, including Criminal Justice Reform Unit, Public Defense Services Department. Also, the portfolio includes Office of Emergency Management and the County's Emergency Communications System and Elections Department and Facilities
Actually,
Management.
Not elections.
Not elections.
No,
was that
just
taken?
Facilities, yeah.
Okay, so that's out. But anyway, overall, this is a lot.
It's a lot. It's a very good job.
It's a lot on the table for you.
Yeah. I'm accustomed to that.
Yeah, that not that you can't handle it. And, of course, when people hear assistant administrator to Chuck Huckleberry, the obvious question comes up. It's been 6 weeks since that horrible accident involving Mr. Huckleberry. He was on his bicycle doing nothing wrong. He was at a stoplight. There was an accident in front of him. It pushed back into him. What are you hearing? Just pretty much what all of us are hearing?
Yeah, the family's taking care of Chuck, and they're private about it, as they should be. It's a private matter, and we're all wishing him a very speedy recovery. His injuries were serious, and he's not a kid. He's 71 years old, so I hope the very best for him. I look forward to him coming back. And moreover, to making a full recovery. I mean, the man has given his whole life to public service, as I have. And if he's unable to come back to work, I just hope in the full breadth of life and happiness moving forward, he certainly earned that.
Mark Napier, has the team coalesced around Jan Lesher?
Absolutely. Jan is just doing a fantastic job, and everybody's picking up the loose ends, as we should, as Chuck would want us to, and continuing to move the county forward as we should. And Jan has got a lot on her plate. She's doing a great job. I meet with her regularly, and I think we're keeping the ship afloat and moving forward and waiting to hear more about Chuck.
As I mentioned at the intro, Dan Scheer is here, editor of the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. He's the editorial director for now more than two dozen newspapers owned by the Sierra Vista-based WIC Communications. Dan, Mark Napier's been in the news, so it's very serendipitous to have Mark with us.
Definitely. Mark, I wanted to ask you, though, before we moved on to other stuff, how has your role changed since Chuck's injury? Have you guys picked up a lot of extra duties?
You know, I would say that Jan, in all fairness, Jan is shouldering the majority of that. The other assistant county administrator and Carmine DeBonis, we really had full plates. So Jan has just taken on a tremendous mantle of responsibility, and she offloads things where she can.
There is something on the addendum for next week's meeting that would actually ask to make her acting county administrator, how would that be different than what she is doing now?
I would see that more as a formality. She certainly assumed that role since Chuck is, you know, we have a continuity of operations, and she's kind of assumed that role, and I think it just formalizes what we're already doing.
Now, Dan, I'll bring this, set this up about the constables. Mark Napier has put out a report. Basically, he would like to see some continuity with our eight metro, Tucson metro area constables. Mark, a lot of listeners don't have any idea who their constable is. They don't know what they do. These are elected people in their particular district. Overview, give us the 30-second elevator speech of what a constable is.
The constables primarily serve court paperwork. That would be the easiest way to say it. That would be evictions, orders of protection, other court-related paperwork. So they're kind of married up to a justice of the peace in a specific precinct. Unlike the justices of the peace that are consolidated, because the court consolidated some time ago, so the justice court is a consolidated function, the JPs are still assigned to a precinct, so they're very precinct specific, but generally serving court paperwork and court orders are their primary function.
And the way they execute their role, though, is different. Each one of them does it in a different way, and I think, is that kind of what you were looking for with this report, to try to bring some uniformity to the role, including the way they present themselves, speaking of uniforms?
Yeah, there's a great diversity in the way that they pursue their duties, and that's problematic because to the citizen, they're seeing a constable, they're seeing an agent of the county. And it'd be much like if deputy sheriffs in Foothills dressed completely differently than they did in the Santa Vera district, and you'd go, was this a deputy or not? I don't know, because they don't appear to be. We have constables that appear to be very much like tactical police officers in the way that they dress. And there are others that appear to be social workers. And a citizen, irrespective of what precinct they're in, might interact with somebody who at one interaction appears to be a law enforcement officer and in a separate interaction appears to be a social worker. And they go, well, is this still a constable? If you're subject to an eviction, you might be treated very differently. I mean, fundamentally differently based on which precinct you live in. Well, removing somebody from their home is a pretty serious sanction. And we would want, I think the county has a prevailing interest in ensuring some consistency in the manner in which that occurs. I, having been, as you pointed out, an elected official, I respect and understand the autonomy of an elected official. I do. I get it. But that doesn't mean a lack of accountability. I never assumed that I was not accountable to county administration or to the citizens of this county because I was an elected official. So I think some accountability and some direction to even to elected officials is arguably appropriate.
And when Steve Christie, Dan, was with us yesterday, Pima County Supervisor, District Number 4, Republican, the lone Republican on the board, he's got some concerns over Mark's report.
He does have a lot of concerns over the report, and I think part of it is just at what point do what authority do you really have? You said it yourself many times as an elected official, as the sheriff, that I answer to the people. Your budget was set by the county, so you had to play nice with them, and it was a little bit of a strange dance sometimes. But who really has the authority over the constables to be able to go in there and say, look, you need to dress the same, you need to act the same, carry out the duties a little bit more in concert with each other? Who really can do that?
Well, authorities is different. And you point out that, you know, the budget, we certainly control the budget of the constables and other aspects of the environment in which the constables, or in my previous case, the sheriff operated, right? And so having the authority to tell them to do something, no, I don't have the authority to do that, nor does the county administration to say you have to dress a certain way, you have to do certain things. But that does not mean that the county doesn't have a prevailing interest in all agents of the county and how they assume their duties, the fiscal responsibility of those agents, and the service that they provide to the citizens. If the deputy sheriffs under my administration were providing lousy service, and I said, well, that's fine, I'm the sheriff, I get to do whatever I want to, there would be a concern on the part of the county administration to that to that effect, and rightly so.
Well, County Administrator Huckleberry is wielding a pretty big hammer on this. In an October 6th memo, he writes, I will be recommending that all of the elected constables be phased out and replaced with civil service employees at a cost significantly less than what they're making now, which is 67. He wants to basically cut their pay a third and make them county employees, which would mean that they could control them more. Is that accurate?
Well, it's not them, because if you remove the elected officials, them would no longer exist. They would become county employees, administrative employees of the county. And I think that was an idea that Mr. Huckleberry had, but I think it would also require some legislative changes, because the constables are a part of a legislative body, much like justices of the peace. So it would require a legislative change, I believe.
Really, and this was Steve Christie's problem too with this, is that you're taking some power from the people, because right now we elect the constables. There are 10 of them, and 8 of those are concentrated in this metro area. But the county wants that to go away.
No, I don't think that's really the prevailing interest of the county. I think more so is what I point out in my report, is that there's a lack of consistency, a lack of uniformity, which is problematic in the way that the county serves its populace, and the county administration has a prevailing interest in that. So I don't have any interest in taking authority away from the constables or impeding upon the autonomy of elected officials. I was one. I get it. I do understand that. But that doesn't mean that I don't have a concern that citizens in different precincts within metropolitan Tucson area are treated very differently and approached very differently by people who look differently. I'll give you an example. Currently, and this should be shocking to everyone, we have constables that carry firearms, but the constables have no use of force policy. Now, the county has a prevailing interest in that, Dan. They do. To say, look, you know, we indemnify you. And they do. They indemnify these folks, but they carry firearms with no use of force policy and not a consistency in the manner in which they're trained. These are problems. They don't have a consistent base of policies. Things, because they act as quasi-law enforcement officers, and there should be a consistency in policy, a consistency in appearance, and these fundamental high liability policies should be uniform and adhered to by all the constables, and the county does have a prevailing interest in that.
Your report is very interesting, and it creates this image in my mind of kind of a Lord of the Flies thing going on with the constable's office, that you have 10 people doing things 10 different ways, and that it's very potentially destructive, and it is. You paint a very good picture of that. Do you think that Huckleberry's push to perhaps do away with elected constables is really just an attempt to get them to straighten up, or do you think he really means it?
I would not speak to Mr. Huckleberry's motivation. I will say that I have approached him with a carrot and a stick approach. I've told him, I said, look, there are certain things that the county administration can do that may be unsatisfactory or disquieting to you, but I'm stand ready to help them. I've told Presiding Constable Stevens on many occasions, I would be willing to help you with some administrative work. I mean, I would be willing to help you. I'll give you guidance on things that I think you can improve upon without infringing upon your autonomy as an elected official. I don't want to do that. I respect that.
So who sets the guidelines for a constable and the job description? Is that...
It's in part in Arizona Revised Statutes. There's a county Constable's Ethics and Standards Board that also provides some canons of ethics with respect to constables.
Are those suggestions for them, or just?
Well, no. The county, the Constable Ethics and Standards Board can recommend disciplinary action. Currently, we have a constable who's on suspension for inappropriate conduct, and so there are some ways to hold them accountable, much like you can hold law enforcement officers accountable.
All right, let's pause right here, Dan. I know you have more on the constables, but I have more about Mona's Danish Bakery.
There you go. Happy
that,
to
that wonderful good transition, that though. Wonderful Danish coffee cake, which is the cousin of the Kringle. Tom Fairbanks, you've had a couple of pieces of the Danish coffee cake. Would you describe
why
for our
just
listeners?
Eat one when you can have two?
That's right, right. And what flavor did you?
It tastes like a blueberry, and I think you said it was like a multiberry.
Yes, they're calling it a multiberry, and it is delicious. There's no question about it. It is the Danish coffee cake, and of course they do the Danish Kringle. Mona's home of the Danish Kringle, and Mark Napier, I know you love Mona's.
Oh, I do. Just walk in there and take in a deep breath.
Yeah, there
that's
you go.
That's what you need to do.
Mona's, the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They are open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 for breakfast Tuesday through Sunday. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. We'll have more with Mark Napier in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Remember Green Things for all of your poinsettias. They grew 25,000. This year, and they are going fast. So check it out for your holiday decorating. Be right back.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Mark Napier is here. He is Assistant Pima County Administrator. Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. And our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Caller Matt is with us. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Mark. First of all, I congratulate Chuck on bringing you aboard.
Thank you.
I think you bring a lot of experience that can be helpful. I am skeptical of this first, out-of-the-box project. And not to be critical of you, because I'm sure you were taking your marching orders from Chuck, with regards to... I'm a bit skeptical because the JPs are a complicated thing, and I suspect you're right, that this would require the legislature to intervene, and it would be so complicated for them to have to separate Pima County from the rest of the state in some legal fashion. But it's pretty clear the county attorney also plays a significant role in advising the JPs on their duties and responsibilities pursuant to the law. Also, the courts have a tremendous say that they work with closely. So they're a complicated entity unto themselves, and I understand that they are sort of unique, but I agree that your office could help them more and offer some sort of ideas and policies that would allow them uniformity. Finally, do you have any role to play with the current dispute now that, you know, things are being shuffled around the office with regards to the change in differential rates? I'm just sort of curious how much roles you're expanding. And also, if the county does fire people from the jails, are we going to have enough people to help the sheriff? Is the sheriff going to have enough bodies to do the jail work? Thank you.
Well, Matt, that was a compound question.
Yeah, the differential water rates, yeah, do you have anything to do with that?
No, differential water rates are outside my scope of duties. You know, you brought up JPs and you kind of lumped them into the same category as constables. There are some issues on the JP side, and I'm working on those things. I had a very productive meeting with the court administrator yesterday, and of looking at ways that county administration is not in conflict with constables or JPs, but we're collaborating on ways that we can do business better and better serve the people of the county. And I think that's an incumbent responsibility. There are some worries with the number of corrections officers that may potentially let go as a result of the vaccine mandate for vulnerable populations. Of course, there's some concerns there. But I would encourage everyone. I've gotten my vaccines, not because anybody mandated me to, but because it's a good idea. And I have some risk factors personally. And one of my son-in-laws has type 1 diabetes, which is a significant risk factor. So I would encourage everybody to get the vaccine, because I've actually lost a good friend, Benny Napoleon, who was a sheriff in Wayne County, Michigan, which is the Detroit area. Benny got COVID and died. And I've had some friends that have had very serious reactions to COVID who otherwise believe they were healthy. So I encourage everybody to get vaccinated. It's free. It's readily available. And I can't see a prevailing reason not to.
Yeah, and they'll have a opportunity tomorrow, folks, not only to start the vaccines, the two traditional vaccines, but to get the booster at the Tucson Convention Center.
We're doing an excellent job at the county. I've got to give us commend the folks working on that project of making vaccines and testing readily available. It's free, and it's not like you have to drive to Phoenix and pay $1,000 to get the vaccine. It's right here. It's free. And I personally don't want to risk whether or not I'm one of those people that get very seriously ill.
Yeah.
Because you honestly don't know. I have a friend I play golf with, and Mike got it, and Mike otherwise believed he was healthy, and he was in ICU, and they said, you know, you're probably going to die, and Mike pulled out. But months and months later, he still got residual effects of having COVID. He's still not up to what he normally would be.
Here's Dan Shearer, the Green Valley News.
I want to go back and revisit the constable question just a little bit. We were talking about holding them accountable and what can be done, and you know, kind of where the boundaries are. The truth is that you cannot call the constables to a meeting. They don't have to go if they don't want. But we do have this presiding constable Stevenson. Can you tell me what kind of authority he has over them? What's his role and what's your relationship with him?
Well, first of all, I've known Mike for 25, 30 years. I mean, I consider him a good friend, somebody I've known for a long time. I respect him. The presiding constable is doesn't have any exact authority over constables because they're all elected officials. They're co-equal. So he doesn't have any authority. But what we do with the presiding constable is expect that they would take some administrative oversight over the constable's office, you know, and help guide policy and practice and stuff and encourage those things. So those are things that are under Mike's control. And I call Mike anytime, and we would meet. We've had very cordial meetings because we've known each other for a very long time. And that's the fact is the majority of the constables I've known for 10 to 20 years and consider them friends on both sides.
But the fact is that if he were to write a policy that called for uniformity, they still would not have to follow it.
They clearly would not.
And really what we have here is a huge philosophical difference between among all these constables. And is that really the problem?
I think they're a fractured group, and I think that they need to come together and say that all of our differences aside, we have a prevailing interest in ensuring that when somebody sees a constable, that is a recognizable person. So there's some uniformity in our appearance. It's a safety factor, if nothing else, that we have a prevailing interest as a group of having a use of force policy. We have a prevailing interest as a group of having a defined policy manual that outlines the general manner in which we'll go about the dispensation of our duties. I think these are reasonable things. I really do.
Are they law enforcement officers?
It's a kind of a gray area of statute, but in some parts of the statute, they are considered to be quasi law enforcement officers. So yes, they have some of the powers that a deputy sheriff would have because they're out executing court orders and so forth.
How would I know if one showed up at my door? Are they going to show me some kind of identification or badge? And maybe this gets back to that whole uniformity thing you're talking about.
Therein lies the problem. I think it's a safety factor. It's like if somebody showed up at your door and said they were a deputy sheriff and
right,
they're wearing blue jeans and a T-shirt, you go, well, wait a minute, I called 911. I expected a cop to come.
Yeah, I don't see your uniform.
So I think, I don't care what it is. I mean, if they all want to look like quasi-law enforcement officers with tactical body armor and all that, that's fine. But then every citizen who sees a constable recognizes that person as a constable. It's not somebody impersonating a constable. And I think that simple things like that, a use of force policy, a consistency in appearance are things that while they have the autonomy as elected officials to not do these things, I think the county and them as elected body of elected officials have a prevailing interest in doing these things. I'm not asking them to do unreasonable things. I'm simply suggesting some areas for improvement. And I'm willing to collaborate and cooperate with them in any manner they want in seeing those things occur.
But, you know, you have a situation here, and this is what you're describing, is that you have a constable who will show up at, say, an eviction, and one of them wants to bust some heads, the other one wants to give them a stuffed animal and give them a hug. And if this now suddenly was not an elected position and it came under Pima County, we know Pima County leans left, so that's more toward the stuffed animal approach, and that is probably what might be lost here, is that people fear that the court orders won't be carried out because it now comes under a county that might say, cut them some slack, because Pima County does that.
Now, I disagree. I don't think there's any desire on the part of the county administration to ignore valid court orders. I don't see any propensity for that whatsoever. But it's the manner in which you do it. We enforce, as law enforcement officers, we enforce speeding tickets. The manner in which you deliver one can vary differently. You can have a very authoritarian hardliner, or would you rather have the person that was courteous, kind, and explain the violation to you? Do you want everybody that goes 1 mile an hour over the speed limit to get a ticket? I don't think we do. We want some discretion there. Law enforcement has always had discretion within certain boundaries. We can't ignore things, but the manner in which we go about our duties can be softer. And I would expect if somebody were handling a traffic accident, my daughter were going to get a ticket, I'd want her treated with consideration and respect and dignity. I don't think that means you don't get a ticket.
But as we pointed out earlier, we already currently have one constable who is on suspension in part because of an eviction situation where he wasn't going to carry out those papers. Now, if this all went under the county, the voters wouldn't have the opportunity to vote him out for not doing his job. It would now be how the county wants to discipline him. That's some of the concern here.
Well, under that scenario, and I don't think that scenario will come to life, but under that scenario, that person would be a county employee and subject to disciplinary action as a county employee. That's correct. But we would not have the ability to summarily ignore court orders. I don't think that's on the county's radar screen at all.
All right. Carl has been listening to our conversation and would like to add his comment. Carl, calling us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Carl, what is your comment for Mark Napier?
Okay. Yeah, I'm just Joe Citizen down here in Pima County. And I tell you what, I like having the constables the way they are. They're accountable to the citizens. And with the things that have gone on with the county previously, I just see this as a kind of a power grab that somebody's trying to get a hold of it. And I think that I'm speaking for myself, but I think I'd probably speak for a number of other people, that we really want the situation the way it is and just let the constables do what they're doing per the legislative laws. And if the voters don't like it, the voters can throw them out.
Carl, I respect that. I do. And I'm not not opposed to what you're saying at all. I respect the autonomy of elected officials, and I think that ideally the counties, the constables remain as elected officials, accountable, as I was as your sheriff, to the citizens of the county. But that doesn't mean there shouldn't be some uniformity in their approach, their appearance, their policies that the county has a prevailing interest in. We can do that without ruining their autonomy or making them less accountable to you as their constituents.
We should also very briefly point out a reality here, Carl, and that is that constables are on the bottom of the ballot and nobody really knows who they are. We don't know who we're voting for. I wish people were more engaged to know that we should vote the bums out, but it simply doesn't happen.
Mark, we're going to let you go. You all have right. a 1 o'clock meeting
yes,
downtown,
I do.
So we kept you over a few minutes extra.
It's always good conversation with you two, my friends. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mark Napier, the Assistant Pima County Administrator. I got a lot to talk with Dan Shear about that's coming up after we take the break on the Buckmaster Show. Friday Focus interview. Again, we thank former sheriff and now Pima County Administrator Mark Napier for coming in on a very, very busy day. All right, we'll pause right here in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios. And when we come back, Dan Shear is going to talk about this column he wrote, people begging for money in Green Valley. And it appears that they're playing the violin. No, it's actually a recording. Anyway, that's coming up next.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back, Buckmaster. On a Friday, our thanks to Mark Napier, former Pima County Sheriff, Pima County Administrator, now in his new role. And we spent a lot of time, Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun with me in studio. Dan, we spent a lot of time talking about the constable thing, because that's kind of the big issue that Mark's got on his plate right now. But at the end of the day, the power that Mark and Mr. Huckleberry have is limited with these people.
Yeah, it's almost zero other than what Mr. Huckleberry has done, which is come back around and say, look, we might just consider taking your whole job away if we can, you know, get
legislative approval,
they may need. And so we'll see. But I will tell you again, the report that Mark Napier put together on the constables was it nailed it. We in the media have known that this thing has been screwed up for a long time, and that there are lots of factions, and it's very difficult. I will tell you, Tom Shenick is down in my area. He gets the job done. He gets knocked in one of these reports because it's, you're not serving as many papers as others are. Well, because his area is
huge.
Monstrous.
Right.
And so you got to take all that into consideration. But they're doing a good job, but at the end of the day, they don't really have a big stick here.
Yeah, and I'm very sympathetic to what Mark was saying about uniform appearance, because I don't know if a constable knocks at my door.
Absolutely.
What I would expect. And also, there's the issue about liability and firearms. So I think those are two biggies.
Yeah, great. We covered a lot of ground here, but in the end, will anything really change? We'll see.
Yeah, what's this thing about now? We're all used to seeing folks who are asking for money. They have usually a sign. They're on a corner, but now they're in a supermarket parking lot in Green Valley playing an instrument, the violin to be specific.
Well, and this is nationwide.
Or are they playing it?
No, they're not playing. This is nationwide. Go Google fake violin scam and you'll see it. And people will say, well, okay, what's the big deal? They're just pretending to play the violin. That's not the point. They are deceptive. They're lying. They just swing across the country. They go into a parking lot, they play until they're asked to leave, and people, and they have a big sign, and it's one of these woe is me signs that says, you know, I've got 18 kids and two apples to feed them for dinner tonight type of a thing. And it's all a lie, Bill. And the fact is, there are some people who are very needy who are on street corners.
Of course,
I get it.
Of course.
This is deception. And
where's the music coming from?
Well, they have a big speaker there, and there's a recording somewhere in there. And I will tell you this, my wife plays a violin, and so I've seen the violin played many, many times. I play the radio, that's it. But I'm looking at this guy, and I'm just laughing. I go, we had one in our area, someone alerted me, I went out, and there I am standing in the parking lot watching him play.
And you wrote about it, you actually confronted the
people. I did confront him and ran him out of the parking lot. And so this is where, and you know we're not supposed to do this as journalists, but
this is advocacy journalism from Dan Scheer.
We don't want to make the news, we want to report the news.
Yeah.
But as you know, I am so protective of these people in Green Valley who get taken all the time.
Do you think some of them actually thought that he was actually playing?
Oh, they all did. And and I approached him and said, this is a scam, and turned many of them away, which got them a little upset. So I approach him and I say, you're not playing the violin.
Many of those people are on limited income, and here it is Christmas.
Absolutely.
They don't have the money to give it.
Yeah, so I was surprised at the guy's answer. He looked me straight in the eye and he goes, Italiano, no English. So right there, he's trying to evade responsibility by not speaking the language.
Oh,
so I started speaking to him in Spanish, and my Spanish is pretty good. Mm. And I figure Spanish and Italian are close. But I knew he was lying. And a woman came up to me about a minute later, and she goes, I gave him some money. And I sat there and talked with them in English about their kids, about where they've traveled.
Yeah.
So these people are, they're sweeping through, getting what they can, and taking money that really could be going to known, legitimate, reliable organizations in your community, and they're ripping us off is really what it amounts to. And I've heard from a few people who have said, well, you know what, the people can give where they want to give and just lay off your bullying.
Yeah, what are
them.
You doing interfering, they're saying.
All I'm saying is that if you're lying about, you know, speaking English, and you're lying about playing the violin, you're lying about other things. And that is where this money's going for. It is not going to help your family. It's going to go do whatever you need to. You're just lazy. And it's tax-free, and it bothers to me, Bill, and that's why I went out there and chased him out of that parking lot. But
you wrote about it as well.
Yeah, and so the point is that knowledge is power, and I hope that we can put some of this in the hands of people. And they say, and so many people have said, "Gosh, I didn't know. I gave to them, and I didn't know."
On a brighter note, historic Canoa Ranch,
which turns 200 years old next week, oddly enough. And Adelita Grijalva is going to be down there reading a proclamation and everything. But they are launching a new Christmas tradition. They kind of did a soft launch last year. But it's, think about zoo lights, but it's at Canoa Ranch, which is just barely south of Green Valley.
Where is Canoa Ranch?
So if you're going down I-19, there is a Canoa Road exit.
Okay.
Go there, and it's going to be on the left. It would be directly south of the Santa Cruz Valley Regional Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tuesdays through Saturdays in December, except 24th and 25th, it's going to be open. It's free. They might ask for a can of food for the food bank and $5 here and there. There's going to be some entertainment on a couple of nights. We have a story on our website if you want to go do this, but it's outside, lots of lights, a little bit of hot chocolate. It's a new tradition, and it's wonderful. And by the way, there's a gorgeous lake out there too. So this is new, and we'll see how big it is. There are tens of thousands of lights up, Bill. It's actually incredible.
The supervisorial districts, there's a three way that they carve up one of your towns three ways.
So there are five county supervisors, and the town of Sahuarita is in three of the five districts, which has never made sense to me. You ask people in Sahuarita who your supervisor is, and they just give you a blank stare, and they have no idea. We're hoping that if we can get them all into one district, that'll make things better, and we'll actually have a little more influence with the county. But they are undergoing that process right now, where they're redrawing those districts, and they have to get certain percentages of population in there. But we would love the town of Sahuarita to be in one district. We'll see if that actually happens. I sense that it's not going to. And talk about the fox guarding the hen house. Those who draw the districts are the supervisors themselves, and of course they're going to want to make sure that they keep their district strong for the Democrats or the Republicans, wherever they are.
Well, that was my next question. Who draws the districts?
They do.
This is not to be confused with this very important meeting that's going on Saturday on the congressional and state redistricting.
Right. Independent redistricting commission that has been working very, very hard all year for state legislative districts and congressional. This has nothing to do with that. This is our Board of Supervisors who draw their own districts every 10 years. And I believe the only rule is that they have to get equal populations. But they know where the Democratic and Republican voters are, and they certainly are keeping that in mind.
Well, this was the topic with Bill Maynard and Bonnie Heidler. Bill is the District 11 committeeman. He was on the face-off going against Bonnie Heidler, the Pima County Democratic chair, on our Monday political face-off. Bonnie feels Democrats are really getting stiffed here, and the Republicans are so far very happy with the maps.
It depends on where you are. Down in our area, as far as the congressional maps go, Sahuarita tends to want to be lumped in with Sierra Vista, but right now, as it's drawn, they could be pulled into what is currently Raul Grijalva's district, which is, very left-leaning, and there are a lot of people who are not happy about that. And then you get into the state legislative districts, and it gets even weirder. Right now, Andrea D'Alessandro, who has represented us for about 10 years in the state legislature, could be redrawn into a very conservative district. She was, without a doubt, would lose her spot. And so our other two representatives are Daniel Hernandez, who is running for Congress, so he's out of it, and then Rosana Gabaldon, our state senator, who would stay in the same district, so she would have no problem.
Quick review of newspapers on the level that you deal with them, regional papers, across the West, doing fairly well in the COVID year?
Yes, making money, not, of course, as much as we used to. The big issue is hiring. We are in some fairly remote places, and getting people out of journalism school who want to do what we're doing is getting increasingly difficult, particularly, you know, editors and such. And so
the young people are saying to you, I want to stay in an big urban setting. I don't want to go to South Dakota.
That's a very big part of it. And if you remember right out of school, our thought was, gosh, I just want a job with a decent editor and learn
small
something.
Town.
And you were willing to sacrifice a couple of years to get a great experience.
I went to Sierra Vista. I went to Visalia, California, to name a couple of small towns I worked in.
And if you were with good editors, you learned an awful lot in those markets. And you kind of want to make your mistakes in the smaller markets anyway. Mm-hmm. But if you can get in with a good editor, that's the way to do it. But increasingly, and I don't want to say all of them, but increasingly it's difficult because your lifestyle is apparently more important than getting your career launched in the right direction for some of these people. And that's discouraging, quite honestly. But they also have a lot more options. Mm-hmm. And so they're exercising them. And so they're not going into what we'll call mainstream media, if we can use that term. Mm-hmm. They're doing a lot of PR or working for nonprofits, things like that.
But they can learn online and work as an editor at your papers.
Absolutely. You can do everything. And we just received our second Google News Initiative. We now have a partnership with Arizona State University. It's a big, long, involved conversation, but we're very excited about it. We're moving forward, doing lots of digital innovations for a small company like us, because obviously that's where everything is in the future, and we're making inroads in it, and we're doing some stuff that other people just aren't.
Dan Scheer, I want to publicly thank you for everything you did for this program in 2021. We'll look forward to your support and partnership in 2022. I hope you and your lovely family have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you, Bill, and I love what you do.
Thank you very much. We'll pause right here. Weekend Watch coming up next with Matt Russell.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. And away we go. Weekend Watch presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's the mid-60s today over in Silver, and they're having a great day and a great weekend ahead. Take the three-hour drive. You will not regret it. You'll have a great time. 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do, including doing some hiking. A lot of outdoor activities over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Start your search of things to do and places to stay at southwestnewmexico.org. Here he is, award-winning Tucson publicist, the president and CEO of Russell Public Communications, Inside Tucson business, food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how's your week going?
Well, the week is going great. You know, I took my pilgrim outfit to the dry cleaners after an overeating Thanksgiving, and now the Santa suit is making its annual debut.
Well, we're closing out on 11 full years here on the show, and I remember when you first bought the Santa suit back as we launched the project back in the 2010. I wonder if you've still got that Santa belt, and if you do, it's probably got a couple of extra notches in it.
Yeah. You know me all too well, Bill.
What's going on Congress Street tonight?
Yeah, it's downtown's most festive holiday tradition, Miracle on Congress Street. It returns today and running Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays through December at Playground on Congress. Kids are going to be able to meet jolly old Saint Nick and enjoy a free scoop of candy cane ice cream from Hub's vintage ice cream truck. And grown-ups like us, we can get into the holiday spirit with some special holiday-inspired cocktails from Playground. And across the street, Hub Ice Cream also has turned out 8 new holiday-inspired ice cream flavors. If you bring a non-perishable donation for the food bank, Hub and Playground will match or even exceed every donation made. So it's today and Saturday from 4 to 6:30 and Sunday from 12 to 4.
How about a holiday tamale?
Yeah, Tucson Tamale and Heritage Festival returns to the Casino del Sol's Ava Amphitheater tomorrow from 10 to 5. Of course, this festival has become a Tucson tradition, marking the beginning of the holidays. More than 10,000 people are expected to be on hand for this free and fun event that pays tribute to the tamale, including, of course, that celebrated tamale contest. More than 50 hungry judges are going to be judging in 4 categories, as well as live entertainment. Unwrap your weekend right all day tomorrow at Casino del Sol.
Looking for a nice place to go to breakfast?
Yeah, check this out. You know, for more than a quarter century, Pastiche on North Campbell has been a destination for great lunches and happy hours and dinners. And now, for the first time ever, Pastiche has rolled out a breakfast menu, with the restaurant now opening every day at 7 a.m., The menu showcases nearly 25 morning meals with 6 omelets, 6 different versions of Eggs Benedict, plus, of course, pancakes and English muffins and French toast classics. I think their prime rib Benedict would get my nod, with sliced prime rib and eggs with a rich poblano chili hollandaise sauce. We'll see you at Pastiche for breakfast this weekend.
Wow, that shot of protein would keep me going till 8 o'clock at night, I'll tell you. Boy, you're making me hungry here. What's coming up in the Inside Tucson Business column that also appears in Tucson Weekly?
Yeah, you bet. You know, a communal wine dinner at the Flying V Bar and Grill up at Lowe's Ventana Canyon. They're going to be having this wine dinner next week, and it was inspired by the chef's reflections on his younger years around the family dinner table. So this memory-making story is in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Matt, this is such a great time for our restaurants. You know, they really go all out, and so get out there and support them right now. It'd be very important to close out kind of the pandemic year.
Yeah, they've had a rough year and a half, but I'm delighted to see that people are out eating again and supporting those local independent restaurants, some of the hardest working men and women in the industry right here in Tucson. There's a reason why Tucson is the worldwide city of gastronomy, and all you have to do to appreciate that is to sit down at your favorite restaurant and enjoy the community.
All right, Matt Russell, have a great weekend. Thanks, Matt.
Cheers, Bill.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. That organization is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, my longtime assistant, everybody here at KVOI, including Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing, and the entire team here at Bustos Media Tucson. Have a great weekend, everybody.